Welcome to Grief Street. Okay. So, Jordy.
Erica.
This is our first podcast episode.
It is.
And maybe you can start off with an intro.
Yeah.
Who are you?
My name's Jordy Glassner. I'm a therapist, 32 years old, living in Los Angeles.
Height and weight? No.
And in August of 2023, I was diagnosed with a terminal brain cancer called glioblastoma. And so in the last 6, 7, 8 months since that, I've been trying to figure out, how do I find meaning? How do I find purpose? And this sort of just like came up organically for us, because we, as you'll learn in a second, are both therapists. And so we were like, how can we use our experience, our friendship, and our professional expertise to create a space for people who are going through hard things and maybe don't have a space where they feel heard?
Yeah. And my name's Erica Rosmead, 31, Los Angeles. And
you're so young.
So young. I am a psychologist and I have 2 living children. And before, in my pregnancy, before both of my living children, when I was 4.5 months pregnant, at my anatomy scan, learned that my daughter's brain was not developing properly, and went through an insane amount of doctor's visits and appointments and different providers, and ultimately made the decision to end my pregnancy when I was 6 months pregnant, which was the most traumatizing thing I have been through. And I created an Instagram account from that. And fast forwarding 2 years, when Jordy starts making videos on TikTok and Instagram, I was like, wow, this is so different. Terminal brain cancer is so different than losing your baby. And yet there's such an overlap of themes.
Mm-hmm. And it wasn't just like us two that noticed that. It was like, we've both been contacted by other people who have gone through totally different things, but can relate to the feelings and the experience that we've had. Things that you don't want people to say, or things that people say that feel hurtful. Maybe people not showing up in the way that you were expecting and feeling hurt or disappointed by that. Like, I think there's so many universal topics. And I think what we came back to at the very core of it was just grief.
Yeah. No one can escape it.
No. And everyone experiences it in some way, shape, or form, in relationship, in death, in everything. It's just always there, but I feel like it's sort of like this taboo topic that nobody really wants to touch because it's uncomfortable and they don't know what to say. And so that's when we were like, maybe, like, I've created this space for like glioblastoma online, and Eric has created this space for termination for medical reasons online, where we can like find support and connect people. Why don't we like create a broader space where we can do that for grievers and people who are supporting grievers?
Yeah. So that's our why behind the podcast. But I'd like to take everyone back 27 years.
It's a long time.
Long time. And just talk about a brief intro to our friendship.
Yeah.
My joke is that I used to watch Jordy jump roping outside of her house when we were 3. So technically I've known her since I was 3, but that memory isn't factual.
Yeah, I don't think 3-year-olds can jump rope, but I like the idea of how coordinated I am.
Yeah. But we did live around maybe 6 houses.
6 houses away, yeah. And our little elementary school was on the end of the street. And so we would all like walk to school and...
Oh, I never walked. My mom would drive me.
Okay, so I walked
down
to school.
The street.
So I walked to school, and I remember being in kindergarten, and Erica and I were in the same class, and I think it was around Halloween time.
Yeah.
Everyone was getting Halloween costumes. Her sister and her had been trying on wigs at like Party City probably. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden we get a note that Erica needs to immediately report to the nurse's office because her sister has lice and there's a good chance that she could have lice. And we make a joke that like our teacher at the time, I'm sure she wasn't that old, but she seemed 90.
Yeah.
As a kindergarten teacher. And so she like wasn't going to take her. So she was like, oh, Jordy, like, you're always late and know where the office is. You can take her. So then she exposed me potentially to lice, and I walked Erica to the the nurse's office. She did, in fact, have lice.
I did. But that was the start of our friendship.
That was. We were very there for each other, even in those early moments.
I was like, wow, like, this girl is so nice. Like, I actually remember walking down, which is so wild to think of that we could have memories that early.
It is so sort of, like, crazy. And then, you know, we just, like, grew up in the same neighborhood. We had almost all of the same friends. Even when we no longer went to school together, we still maintained our friendship.
Oh, yeah. There was the time that I got into high school and I took the decision letter into the bathroom, and I knew if I got into this high school that Jordy and I would not be going to the same high school. And I was just crying in the bathroom, and my parents heard me crying and they knew that meant I got in. And they were like, yes, she got in. And then
we were like, no.
No. And then I ran crying, and Jordy and I met up in the middle of the street just crying and hugging each other. And we thought it was like the end.
I know. I don't know what we were thinking. But you know what? That's when you realize like how strong a friendship is. When you don't see each other every day and it's not like a part of your routine, you have to like make time for it.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's one of the things that we've been so good at in our friendship. Like, even when Erica lived, she lived up north for a while. She lived in Colorado for 4 years for college. She lived in New York. And like, we've always maintained such a close friendship, no matter where we are, like, geographically. And I feel like we learned that at a young age. Like, if you want to maintain a friendship, you have to prioritize it.
Yeah, I was actually thinking, I don't know if in the past 10 years there's ever been a day where we haven't talked.
I don't think so. I was looking through text messages the other day, and me and Hank were looking through Facebook stuff, and I basically said, you don't have to call me every day, but I'd love for you to call me every other day. And you were literally like studying abroad in England. And I'm like, that's a lot for me to ask.
But it wasn't.
But it wasn't. You probably still called every day. But yeah, we've just had this like really strong friendship. And I think not only is it like beautiful and so fun to have like been there through all the like celebratory things, like getting engaged and getting married and starting our families and like having our kids grow up together, but also in those really hard, dark moments, like when Erica lost her first daughter, Shayla, like I just remember feeling like, I don't know how to be there for you, but like, I'm just going to keep showing up.
Yeah.
And like hope that it feels good.
Right. Well, and I didn't even know what I needed or wanted. And it was just like, nope, that didn't feel good. Okay, yep, that felt nice. And it was weird because I didn't even know what I needed. And yet I felt like you showed up in a way that matched what I needed.
Yeah. And I feel like I was just thinking, if I was going through a hard time, I would just want to know that someone was thinking about me.
Yeah.
You know, and thinking about what I was going through, even if like that person wasn't up for company. Whatever, right. You know? And so I feel like it's been the same thing. Erica's kind of like been able to get my back now going through this cancer diagnosis and just really like showing up in all the ways. And like sometimes even being ahead of me and knowing what I maybe need or want or don't want. And just like really being there wholeheartedly. And I'm so grateful for that. And I think that it is rare. And we want it to not be rare.
Yeah.
And so that's sort of our why, of why we started this podcast.
Yeah. And one other thing is that when we were 10, we thought maybe we would be bakers.
Oh, yeah. And then we became interested in psychology.
Well, actually, I'd like to go back to baking.
Okay, I'm sorry. Let's go back to the baking.
I can't bake.
Right. I'm a pretty good baker.
But you can.
Yeah. So I could have carried us.
You could have carried us. And I'm just always your sous chef.
Yes.
So I could just...
But a sous chef is an important role.
It is.
And I feel like I'm your sous chef in other things.
Sure. Yeah. But the bakery idea never panned out.
No. We didn't follow that through. But then when we both became interested in psychology, we were like, oh, well, like maybe we'll start a practice together. But then Erica wanted to work with kids and I didn't really want to work with kids. And so we sort of went down these different paths. And now I think we're both feeling like time is fleeting. Life is short. We should do the things that we want to do. Spend time
and
with
I'd like
the people
to hang out with you.
Yeah, we want to hang out and also make a difference and have it feel meaningful. And so that's really like what kind of led us here.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you.
Okay.
Oh, it feels a little targeted.
It does feel targeted because I didn't prepare any questions for you.
No, it just is coming to my mind.
Okay.
Because I think when you think about on the outside, like I'm in this with you, but I think people on the outside of you just say the facts of a 31-year-old with a 1-year-old. had some tingling in her arm and now has terminal brain cancer. Like, how do you integrate that? Yeah. How do you think about that? How do you feel?
I feel like in some ways I'm really grateful that I got like diagnosed at the ER, because I think if I had had enough time to like really think about what was happening, I would have, like, my anxiety would have taken over. I didn't have time to like freak out. I was just sort of like in action mode, like, just get through surgery, just wake up, like, just make sure that you're functioning, like, all of those things. So I didn't even really have time to like think about, oh, what does it mean that I have a brain tumor? Yeah. Does it mean that it's cancerous? Does it mean, like, how's that going to impact my life? Can they just take it out and then I move on with the rest of my life? And then once I found out the actual diagnosis, it was pretty devastating. That was like a really bad day.
Oh, I remember it.
Yeah, Erica was there. She was staying with my son Brody, with our other best friend Alex, and me and Hank, my husband, went to the appointment, and we had been putting so much like hope and time and energy into like focusing on like a benign outcome, and it was like the opposite of benign. It's like the most aggressive you can get.
Oh, that phone call, I remember.
Yeah, and just having to make those phone calls and like give such devastating news to people that love you is like, that was probably like one of the worst days of my life. But then I was like, okay, like, I've lived through the worst day of my life. And I'm still here. Now what? And so I think like being a therapist, it gives you skills. And I think you can speak to this too in dealing with your own trauma. But like you kind of know the things that you need to do. You can still choose not to do them.
Right.
But you have like I had a really good foundation to start with. I had a good support system. I was already in therapy. And I like am a therapist myself, so I know a lot of skills that can like help reduce anxiety and all of those things. So I feel like in that sense, I was in a good place, but like nothing can prepare you for this.
Right.
So like for the most part, I just have tried to be present and find a way to make meaning of my life.
Which I think people find so inspiring, and why people are, because I think a lot of people, I mean, you would never know how you would react, but I think just the idea of getting to that place of making meaning is not really accessible for so many.
It's not, but it was modeled to me by you.
Oh, that's really sweet. Yeah.
Because like you let yourself feel.
Yeah.
And you shared really openly and were really vulnerable. And then you were like, and how can I make this better for other people who are going through it? How can I create a community of providers that are going to be non-judgmental, right, that can help people that are going through this, you know? And you've done such amazing work. And I remember feeling so inspired by that. Oh,
that's very sweet.
Yeah. And so I think like you started it. Wow. I just copied you.
Well, I remember when you got your brain tumor diagnosed.
Oh, yeah.
And I was tracking your location, which maybe people who are listening to this are like, this feels like a really weird relationship. But we track each other.
We do.
I mean, on Find My iPhone.
Yeah, yeah. Not like
I don't have a tracker embedded in your arm.
No, no. Just like
we could do that
the normal way.
And I saw Jordy was hovering over like a red spot. And so I zoomed in and realized it was a hospital. And then I thought, well, if it's for her son, then her husband would be there, and he wasn't. He was at home.
Yeah.
And then I called you and called you and then called Hank.
Yeah.
And then called you some more. And I remember you were giving me very little information. Yeah. And I woke up every single hour night and checked my phone. And then you like finally told me.
Yeah.
That was so terrible.
It was horrible. It was so horrible. Because it's like you were with me. We went on a few trips over the summer. And so you had like seen some of the symptoms I was having.
Yeah, I saw one episode, which we now know is a seizure, but we didn't know that at the time. But I saw the whole left side of your body give out. And it was scary for me to watch.
Yeah. And I remember you being like, this is something you should like for sure get checked out.
Yeah.
And
then I told you, like, you need to go
to just like pay someone. Just like pay out of pocket for like a neurologist. Like, you need to go. And like, I did like make an appointment after that. And then, you know, right before the appointment, I ended up going to the ER anyways. But yeah, I think that day, I like went in just because I was like, this feels a little different than it has every other time. I really didn't believe that there was anything like super duper wrong. And then when I got there, they did the assessments. I remember the doctor was like, oh, like, it's super busy here. So like, let's just quickly do a CT scan to like rule out anything neuro. And then you can go to your neurologist appointment next week. And then they came back and they're like, we have to admit you.
Wow.
And like Hank was putting our son to bed. And so I was like looking at the Nanit camera, like, okay, I'm going to wait until he's asleep before I call Hank to tell him. So like right before I went in for the MRI, I called Hank and I told him. And then I said, I'm going to call my mom now, have her come over to be with our son, and then have Hank come be with me. And we just got like little pieces of information as the night went on. The surgeon came in at like 11 p.m. It was so nice. He drove from his house. And he didn't give a lot of information. And I think they knew like that it was bad.
I think now we know.
Now we know that they knew. But I think I'm grateful they didn't say it, because
it wouldn't have changed
anything. It wouldn't have changed anything. And I don't know what I would have done with that information. I felt like hopeful going into the surgery, not knowing what it was going to be. And I think if I had known that I had a terminal brain cancer diagnosis, it would have been really scary to go into surgery and wake up with that information. So I was like, even though waiting to find out was hard, I feel like I was grateful that they didn't tell me in that moment. So that's why, yes, Erica called me and I knew she had seen where I was. And then she texted me and she was like, I see her at the hospital, like just checking in. And I'm like, I don't even know where to begin. I'm like, and so then, yeah, I texted you and I was like, yeah, so I have a mass on my brain and I don't know exactly what it means. There's some swelling, which I knew wasn't good. And
right. And we did a lot of Googling.
We did a lot of Googling that initially, and then I stopped Googling.
Yeah.
And we can get into that at another point in time. But yeah, just a lot of information gathering in that.
And I know I remember when you woke up from surgery, the first thing you asked was, I can't remember the exact question, but it was around, was it this type of tumor?
Oh, because it's the benign one.
Yes. Yeah. And they said no.
Yeah. Basically, they were like wanting to see, did it come from the brain or was it just like on top of the brain? If it had been on top of the brain, prognosis is a lot better. If it wasn't, prognosis is typically worse.
And it's just wild to me that you, coming out of brain surgery, you knew to just ask that question.
Well, how about the fact that you can just talk when you get out of brain surgery and be like totally coherent? Yes. I was home within like a day and a half.
Yes, that was wild. Well, although it is funny because you were still like a tiny bit high when I saw you. Yeah. And you're like, I'm totally fine. And we're like, her pupils are large. I feel like you're good.
You're good, but like
a little high from the meds.
Yeah. Yeah, they give you good meds.
Which,
as they should.
They should.
Yeah. I'm curious what your experience was like being on the other side of it, like having gone through something difficult and grieving and then having like now been on the other side of it as a support. What has that been like for you?
Oh, yeah. Really terrible.
I know. It's the worst.
It's really terrible. I mean, it's a very different type of experience going through what I went through with Shayla and then in this position, which I'll get to with Shayla later. But here, I sometimes I question of like, is life too good to be true to find your best friend?
I know.
That's where my mind goes. And then
that's literally what she said to me in the hospital. She's like, is this happening because like our friendship is just too good?
Yeah.
Like, are we not just like allowed to have a beautiful friendship? Is it just too good?
And that's now how I feel.
We're being punished, which was hilarious.
I know. But I go into denial a lot.
Yeah.
But I feel a lot of times like a desperation of trying to just hang out with you, because when I'm with you, everything feels,
I know,
pretty normal.
It does.
Except when Saggy, her device.
I'm wearing it, but it's hiding.
Yeah. And we can go into what the device is, but we call him Saggy when he gets in the way.
He gets in the way most of the time. He's like pretty much always Saggy.
Yeah. And I wanted to wear him today.
You did.
Around my waist. And he's heavy and a burden. Yeah. And it sucks being on this side seeing you go through this. Like,
yeah,
I don't like that, because when you love someone and then you see what's happening to them, it's a terrible.
It's the worst, because you know that there's nothing you can really do.
No.
But you, I mean, you've shown up in all the ways, like beyond all the ways. And yeah, I remember feeling so helpless when you were going through your loss and just like wanting to take that pain away from you and not being able to, and like not knowing like how is this person gonna like recover?
Yeah.
Like, how are they gonna go on living, and like what is their life gonna look like?
Right.
And I'm sure those are like the same sorts of questions.
Yeah, and I asked myself those questions at the time. Yeah. Like, I had thought maybe I'll never be able to truly laugh again.
Yeah.
And I just thought it would be tainted always.
Yeah.
And thankfully that's not the case. I've been able to feel a lot of joy.
Yeah.
And then for on my position, it's different because there's so much uncertainty.
So much.
Yeah. I had like more certainty. It was just very traumatizing.
Yeah. You had some certainty, but not a lot.
Right. And I also had uncertainty about my reproductive journey in general.
Totally.
But here I'm like, what are we doing? Like, what's happening?
I know. Yeah. It's like a lot of just feels like sitting and waiting, like knowing that there's something imminent coming, but like already doing all the things we can do to like prevent it. Right. And like also not trying to make myself crazy in the process and still enjoy life.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an interesting position.
Right. It's a different type of grief in that way.
Yeah, it is. But I think that's why we wanted to create this, because our experiences are so different and the experiences of other people who have reached out to us are so different, but like the thread that like makes them feel like seen and heard by what we're speaking about is that grieving piece. And I don't really feel like there are a lot of spaces to talk about that. I think like people become uncomfortable and they want to just like make you feel better. They want to push it under the rug. Yeah. They don't want to bring it up because they might like, you might remind them.
Right.
There's like so many reasons why, and most of them are well-intentioned, but I think our hope for this space is to not only share our own stories and how we're navigating past and current grief, but also bring in, you know, people and have them share their stories about what their grief journey has looked like, and bring in experts in the field in different areas, other, you know, therapists and psychologists and, you know, founders of research organizations, doctors, things like that, who can really speak to the way that grief shows up in those fields.
Right. Because I do think society tells us you grieve and then you move on.
Right.
And I always thought that too, when people who weren't so close to us have died, that, okay, you move on.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we find is that people are just grieving in silence.
Yeah.
Like their whole life is forever changed. And even though people have maybe died 30 years ago, you're still forever grieving.
Yep. So, it may look different and present differently, but it changes like the makeup of who you are.
Yeah.
And so we want like to honor that.
Yeah. And smash those societal beliefs.
Definitely.
So, well, I hope people got to know us a little bit more.
Yeah. And I hope you tune in to our next episode.
Tune in.
Yeah. We're going to have a guest on for our next episode. So that'll be fun.
Yeah. We have many guests lined up and we're very excited. And if anyone ever watching this is interested, has a story to tell.
Yeah. Or knows someone who they think would be like a really great person to share their story. That's really what we're looking to do here, is to just bring awareness to this kind of lonely space.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. I love you.
I love you.
Bye.
Bye.
If you listened to the first episode, you would know why we decided to come back and film a part two. We didn't really like get that vulnerable. We didn't really go into the nitty gritty hard stuff. So I'm going to share something with you that I've never shared.
Oh my God. Before. I feel so nervous.
I know.
I know I'm going to cry. Like, I'm terrified to lose you.
Thanks so much for listening to Grief Street. We put out new episodes every Monday. If you'd like to support us, give us a follow on Instagram and TikTok. Also, subscribe to our YouTube channel to find the video version of our episodes. Please subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts and give us a 5-star review. We would love to hear from you and get some feedback. If you'd like to contact us, please email griefstreetpodcast@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail at 508 508- 508-474-3378. That's 508-GRIEFST. Our theme song is Hepcat Jive, courtesy of purpleplanet.com. We'll see you next time.